What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 50 of the I Love It Here, I Hate It Here podcast. My name is Connor, and I'm joined by the guy who told his girlfriend that he's not pale, he's pasty, and that's why she was stuck with him. You get it? Because it's... No?
Because it's like paste?
Yeah, paste, yeah. Pasty versus pale.
The thing is, I would need a girlfriend to tell that to.
She got away. From the paste. Paste has an expiration date from twitch.tv/MavisTweakingIt. Steven.
You should go up on, you should be a stand-up comic, I think.
I think it's just as soon as you hold the mic in your hand like this, everything gets different.
People always tell me that I should be a stand-up comic, and I tell them no because I prefer sitting down.
And if you want to support us, do we have a Patreon yet, Steven?
No.
Okay. And we have how many weeks left until we're done with this podcast?
It's this episode and then one more and then one more. So we have three.
Oh my
goodness, we have two. So we're counting down till nobody ever has to hear our voices through podcasting again, which is what everyone really wants ultimately.
So once we're done recording this, how long are we going to keep the episodes up before they all come down?
I don't know if I have to delete them or not. I was just going to leave it to exist.
Wow. Okay.
So like when I do run for public office, they can be like, you know, on episode 13 of the I Love It Here, I Hate It podcast, you said something about wanting to eat Pop-Tarts that were unfrosted. Do you have thoughts on this, Congressman?
That's actually unforgivable. I still don't understand why you like that. I've never met anybody else who's willingly done that.
The last time I had it was when I was in like fifth grade.
If somebody had really strict parents, like we went to school with somebody in elementary school who... Their mom, I think we might have talked about this on the podcast before, but their mom would not let them read Captain Underpants books or Harry Potter or play Pokemon, anything like that.
It's satanic.
Yeah, satanic, like anything that was humorous or fun. I bet you that family did unfrosted Pop-Tarts.
I'll ask them because I'm still friends with the members of that family. So I'll be like, hey, were you allowed to have unfrosted Pop-Tarts?
Can they do stuff now that they're like, I'm assuming they've moved out of their mom's house. Can they do that stuff
yes,
now?
Yes, they can.
Okay.
I can confirm that she has seen Harry Potter and read all the books. So,
whoa.
And can confirm that.
So she's going to hell.
Yeah. Yeah. But aren't we all kind of ultimately?
I'm not. Probably actually. I don't know. It's a really strange thing to think about though, is that, you know, the whole thing about religion is like, it's all about the afterlife.
Exactly.
It's like
only like you're doing things while living to go to the afterlife.
Yeah.
Essentially like karma and all that stuff.
It's almost like what parents do to kids with Santa Claus. They're like, all year you're going to do this stuff. And then one day, at the end of the year, you're going to be rewarded with presents.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So God is kind of like Santa for adults.
That's true.
And I think that's the most quotable thing I've come up with in the past couple episodes. Actually, no, last week we had some good stuff.
We did have some great stuff. You struck gold with the mouse balls conversation, talking about male contraception, because I posted the video clip not only to our podcast page, but also to my personal Instagram account. And a lot of people thought that we were going off the deep end with the mouse balls. So
it's a legitimate question, though. Is it not? Was anybody in your DMs like, hey, this is how we did it. I was part of the research. The mice have balls.
No one was, but I had a few people say mouse balls, ? So it's madness. And you know what else is madness?
What's that?
So you've been raving about this TV show for, I don't know, the past month or so, I think, at least. And you're so amped to be able to like watch it live as it was airing Sunday nights at 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you convinced me to watch it because I texted you and I was like, hey, should I watch this show? And for those that are curious, the show is called Succession. And when you want to talk about going to hell, every single character on this show is on a one-way ticket straight to hell.
Total dirtbag show.
They are all horrendously terrible people.
Privileged beyond compare.
A few of them less so than the others, but...
Greg Nation.
I'm on like episode 8 now, and I have a few thoughts. The first one I texted you earlier is, I think this might be the best theme song of any TV show.
Yeah, dude. Yes.
It's either that or Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is very, very fantastic. But Succession is like the piano keys and everything is just, it slaps.
The piano keys with the 808s, dude. Yeah. Really good stuff. Really good stuff. Yeah.
basically what Succession is there's this media mogul and he was going to step down and whatever, and he said not to. So now all of one of his kids are all fighting over who is going to be in charge. And I can't stop watching.
It's a lot of backstabbing, you know, family politics.
Yes.
You know, they'll do like this beyond, like rich beyond your wildest imagination. They do like really, really rich people stuff. And it's kind of sickening, but it's also fun to watch.
And like you find yourself rooting for somebody, but then they do something and you're like, okay, next. But then like it kind of circles back to that person. You're like, okay, I kind of want them to kind of get what they want. And then there's like one thing in the episode that like sets everything off. And you're like, wow, this person just stabbed this person in the back. And now this person is taking power because of it and all that stuff. And it's like, holy smokes. It's like so well written.
Who are you rooting for right now? If you're on episode 8 of season 1, right?
I'm rooting for Kendall, I think.
Have they had Shiv's wedding yet?
No.
Okay.
They've not. They're, I'm rooting for Kendall. I'll leave it at that. Cause I don't know if we have listeners I want to watch or not, but Kendall is the eldest son, I think. And he's who I'm rooting for right now, but I'm sure
forgetting Connor. Everybody forgets Connor. Do not forget Connor.
Connor's not really like a memorable name.
Connor's out of here. Not really. Stop with the disrespect.
It's not really a strong name.
It's Michigan State week. We're respecting each other. Yeah, no, that's a great show though. I'm so happy you're watching. You appreciate good things most of the time.
Yeah, I do. Like Dune. Like my background is Timothée Chalamet from Dune. And let me just tell you.
Yes.
Every time that Timothée Chalamet exists is a good time for humanity. I mean, he's like not even peaking, but he's at the peak of whatever mountaintop he is going up and up and up in like worldly stock. Like he yes. is going to be, how old is he? Like 25, 26?
I don't even want to look it up. It's going to be sad.
He's already been in like 70 million critically acclaimed films. He's now in a franchise of Dune that could be between 1 and 9 movies long. I don't know how long.
Really?
Because I didn't even know that it was a part one. I thought that it was a standalone film. I thought that it was going to be like fully complete. And it pops up on the freaking screen saying part one. And I'm like, oh no, strap in, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be buck wild.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal.
Really good
and
movie.
So when you talk about me enjoying good things, duh.
Yeah, but no, he's a talent for sure. He's like he's somebody you should have bought stock in like whenever Lady Bird came out, even though I watched Lady Bird and I didn't really love him in it, to be honest. I thought he was like his character was supposed to be, you know, unlikable, but I also didn't think he was amazing in it. But since then, I've not seen anything with Timothée Chalamet that I was like, oh, he's not one of the strongest parts of this movie.
I think my favorite role of his so far is Call Me By Your Name. I think he's really good in that. But other than that, like I thought he was decent in Lady Bird. I think he was in Little Women for a little bit too. He's good in that.
Yeah. You got to watch Hot Summer Nights.
I am going to watch Hot Summer Nights. That's next on my list because, you know, I don't have an actor that I've seen like every single one of their movies. And he's relatively new. So if I start now,
right,
then I can play catch up for a little bit and then I'll just watch everything that it comes out. But
Dune was fun, though. I watched that last night. A lot of the reviews I saw were about, okay, you have to see this in the theater. You have to have the surround sound. I didn't really feel like going to a theater. So
I didn't either.
I connected my like surround sound, like Bluetooth headphones to my TV. And so I was watching on like the 50-inch LED TV with like the Bose headphones. It was a really great experience.
I actually plugged in my sound bar with my TV and just sat because my bed is like, here's my bed and then here's my TV. So I just laid in bed and watched it and had Five Guys and was just,
oh my
heaven.
God.
I was in heaven.
You're addicted.
It was like the best Friday night I've ever had ever.
Steven didn't have five. You didn't have Five Guys up until like what, 3 weeks ago?
It's probably been, I've been moved down here for 7 weeks now. So,
wow. Okay. Seven weeks and you've had Five Guys how many times?
3 times. So it's like once every 2.5 weeks, which is decent, but
I had it yesterday. I love it too. no, it was a really good movie though. My Letterboxd review, like, brought it back to my ancestors. So I'm Irish and Dutch. And so there's bagpipes in this movie that are awesome.
Dude, the bagpipes are sick.
When they land on the planet, I'm like, yes, my representation. And then the whole thing's about the spice trade. And my Dutch side is like, ooh, spice. Colonization, let's go.
Yeah, you're all about that. And then like Zendaya was in it. Jason Momoa was in it.
Were you Oscar disappointed Isaac at all?
I was very disappointed with Zendaya's screen time because in the the commercials and their press tours and everything made it sound like she was going to be in it all the time. And while she was still in it, it was not enough for what I was expecting.
And it makes more sense now that it's a part one, part two thing.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, but I guess that's like mild spoilers. Maybe we shouldn't spoil the rest of the movie, but we both agree it's worth watching.
I need to bring up, is this the most attractive a cast has ever been? You have Oscar Isaac.
Yep.
You have Jason Momoa.
Yep.
Timothy Chalamet.
Yep.
Zendaya.
Yep.
Josh Brolin. And then but Dave Bautista's kind of in it, but he's sort of like not himself.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not. He doesn't look attractive in this.
So I think that they're a pretty attractive movie.
Yeah.
I can't think of one that's more attractive other than like ensemble rom-coms or something, or like the Marvel movies, which I guess could qualify. But
it's fun. I mean, what was the one with Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone? Something about love.
Yeah.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah. Crazy Stupid Love.
That's a really attractive cast. Julianne Moore, shouts out. Dune was fun. I'm excited for part two. I don't know when that's going to be.
Not soon enough.
So it's Halloween coming up here.
It is.
So the other night, you and I and a bunch of other friends were on Discord and we were playing Jackbox games. And then randomly people, we just started getting into costumes. So I've got my standard Sergeant Short Shorts, I think is what it's called. Yes. It's like a Reno 911 outfit. I threw that on. And it just, I know that you have it written down here, Steven. So I just wanted to
bring in
Halloween costumes.
I just wanted to ask you a few questions. What was your favorite Halloween costume that you've ever had?
It was a Scream costume. So like the ghost, the bad guy in Scream.
Okay.
I wore that same costume for, I think, 4 Halloweens in a row. Unbelievably comfortable. It's like a dress, essentially, which as a boy, you're not used to wearing. It's just it's good airflow. Really comfortable down there. You don't worry about like underwear riding up. They're very comfortable. Really enjoyed the Scream costume. Like from a comfort perspective, that's my favorite one.
Mine would have to be, I went as a bulldozer one time. My grandma would love to like make actual costumes. So I'm going to share a photo of it on Instagram, but she made it out of like cardboard box, egg crates, like egg cartons, and a bunch of other weird things. And it was just so awesome. So I'm going to share a photo of that on our pages. I also went as like a football player 7 years in a row. So that's not very original. Do you have like a best Halloween moment?
I can tell you probably the low point of my Halloween going career.
Okay.
And it was actually a time you and I were together and we went to your dad's. I think it was your dad's. He lived in like a new development area and it was terrible weather. Somebody went as Jack Sparrow. I went as a gangster. So I had, one of those brimmed hats and I remember getting soaking wet. I was freezing and then my hat blew under a car and I went down to go get it. And then I ended up like pretty much laying in a puddle because I was dumb.
Yeah.
And so I was just freezing cold the whole time.
I like that for you a lot.
What were you asking me? My best Halloween moment?
Yeah. My best Halloween moment. I don't remember, but I do remember my worst Halloween moment.
My best Halloween moment would be, I want to see the second grade and went to elementary school. Her name was Coral. Went to her house for Halloween and her parents threw an awesome Halloween party. Like the garage was converted into like this. It was supposed to be like scary. And her dad at the time was like dressed up and chasing us around. And we were all very scared.
When you say
on a trampoline.
When you say her dad at the time, is he no longer her dad?
Well, her stepdad at the time. I think her mom has since remarried.
By the semantics of your sentence.
Yeah, no, her mom, I think, is since remarried. We watched Goosebumps, but the reason why it's one of my favorite is because a girl kissed me on the cheek for the first time.
Whoa, Connor.
Yeah.
Let's give it up.
I'm not going to say who, because I don't kiss and tell, and I don't get kissed and be told. Yeah,
of course, naturally.
But... 7-year-old me was real jacked.
Yeah. What was my best like Halloween is probably just getting candy. I don't remember any memorable things other than the worst Halloween, which is.
What about the time you, the North Gators and me, did we start at Kristen's or someplace and we ended up going to a.
And we went to like three different neighborhoods.
Tanner went as a banana.
Jesus. Oh, he went as Jesus one time.
He went as a banana for this time because we went to one person in your neighborhood who was giving out like CDs of patriotic songs, but it's like recordings by your neighbor who, right. No offense to her, should have been a lovely lady, but her voice was trash. And so at this house, we show up and this drunk guy is like, "Hey honey, come look. This guy's a hot dog." He was a banana. Tanner was a banana, not a hot dog. This drunk man was confused. Gave us the CD. And so at the end of the night, we go back to Kristen's and we play the CD. And I think I might have actually peed my pants laughing so hard because we put on the tracks. And it's like, God, it's just patriotic music sung by the worst thing you've ever heard.
I like that a lot. So my worst Halloween moment was in high school when my girlfriend at the time and I were going to like pass out candy to like kids, right? So I bought all this candy and everything. And then I just didn't hear from her the whole time. And she's like, "Sorry, I was hanging out with my ex-boyfriend this whole entire time." And my dumbass was like, "Oh, it's okay." Little did he know. So that's why.
That is really rough. No, I don't know if we need to. That's really rough though.
But moving on, my best, what's your favorite Halloween candy? Mine's Reese's, hands down Reese's.
Yours is racist? Did you say Reese's? I didn't. Oh, okay. Gotcha. I was like, that's a weird candy. No, I would. I really like Butterfinger.
Okay.
I don't know. I really like Butterfinger. That's just me. That's just me flexing on all you Brace kids. I know you Brace's kids couldn't have it for so many years, but I was enjoying it every second.
Can we agree that Almond Joys are the worst Halloween candy?
God, get it out of here.
Yeah. Okay.
Get it out of here.
So we listened to some albums. We're 20 minutes in, so I figured we should get to the album stuff now. Oh, yeah. I recommended You Who by Tom Felton, also known as Draco Malfoy, and you recommended Norman Effin Rockwell by Lana Del Rey. And I listened to Lana Del Rey. I think that my favorite song by her is Young and Beautiful, which is from the Great Gatsby soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And it's not on this album, but it's a very beautiful song. I think that the album is good. I think that she has a unique voice that sounds like it could belong in today's generation, but also back in like the 1950s. Yeah. I think that the sound that she has is unique to the time. I'm not sure if it's for me. Enjoyed it. I think that it's an album you have to listen to all the way through. Love Song was good. F It, I Love You was good. Cinnamon Girl is lovely. It's fitting that I wrote that it's fitting that the next best American record has the second fewest plays on her podcast or on her playlist. And then the titular track is good. So
yeah,
the album feels like a journey, but not one I want to take again anytime soon, but it was good. So I don't know how I feel about it because I enjoyed it, but also I don't feel it calling to me to listen to it. Kind of like how I feel with like Florence and the Machine or like Lord, like the three of them kind of like seem like they have similar sounds with their music. And I guess I don't care that much for Lana's stuff.
Yeah, I would say, okay, I liked some of the songs. Like Mariner's Apartment is pretty, it was mellow. F It, I Love You was fun mumbling, also known as fumbling. Shouts out to AJ Dillon on my fantasy team. Fumbled twice today. You suck, dude. And then I like that you brought up Lord because one song specifically towards the end called Happiness is a Butterfly sounded like a Lord song, and I really liked it. Definitely did. But yeah, similarly, I don't think she's for me. Lana Del Rey, I should clarify. Lana Del Rey is not for me. I think I like some of her stuff. Young and Beautiful, like you said, is probably her most well-known song. But yeah, it was good. I wouldn't say it's the 17th best song since 1996 or 17th best album since 1996. But again, if you look at that Pitchfork.
Yeah, it was rough.
Three of the top four albums are okay, or like Radiohead. And then Yeezus is like 13, which is above almost every other Kanye album, which is just
asinine.
Whatever. I'm not going to get mad about other people's opinions. You know, that's something new I'm trying to do.
As you're getting mad. So we also listened to You Who by Tom Felton. And I sent Tom a DM on Instagram. I said, "Hey, I have a podcast. We're talking about your album. Do you want to come on, you know, as a musician, nothing else. He's just a musician. He's not an actor or anything. Surprisingly, he didn't hit me back. I'm a little hurt by that, Tom, but if you hear this, you know, you can always come on our podcast. This album, I wasn't sure what to think. It wasn't bad. I don't think it was bad. The song Dream On was bad. I did not like Dream On, but
it's okay. It wasn't my favorite, but I didn't think it was terrible.
No, but like Loster is a song that's nice sounding. I think he has a decent voice. Blue Skies was a very fun song, and so was Porcelain and Gun. I'm very curious about the stylistic approach to the songs, because some of the letters are like lowercase and some are uppercase.
Just trying to be funky. I don't know. I didn't dig it.
It kind of confused me, but it was a decent album. Like, you can tell that he's not a musician by trade.
I heard Draco Malfoy every time he opened his mouth. I was waiting for him to say Potter,
right,
like in the middle of a song, but he didn't. Big plus for me again. I've said it once. I've said it twice. I've said it, I don't know how many times. Brevity, baby. We love it. This album's like 6 songs long, maybe yeah, five. Like
17 minutes.
Love it. Keep them coming, Draco. Keep it short though.
So Draco, you know, you might have been like a slimy little slime ball in the Harry Potter franchise, but you know, you're not a bad musician.
We love slime balls. Steven, what is your recommendation for next week?
My recommendation for this week is going to be Freudian by Daniel Caesar.
Okay.
What is yours?
Mine is, you brought it up, the Great Gatsby soundtrack.
Ooh, nice. Okay. Yeah, that'll be cool.
Listen to Lana Del Rey. I was like, what song do I really like by her already? Listen to Young and Beautiful. And then I looked through the list. I'm like, Jay-Z, Beyonce, Andre 3000, The XX, Jack White. There's a lot of good stuff on this soundtrack, which we can talk about it next week. But have you watched The Great Gatsby with Leo in a while?
Oh yeah. I only watched it once a year.
It's a kind of a bizarre fantasia, but I love it.
Great Gatsby is my favorite novel of all time, I think.
Shouts out to F. Scott Fitzgerald, right?
Yeah, and his alcoholism for giving us good content.
So
what do you love? What do you hate? How many do you have?
Well, I only have one of each, so maybe you should like kind of Oreo cookie it.
What I love is Chex, chocolate, peanut butter, and powdered sugar. Do you know what that makes?
Puppy chow.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but the brand like Chex Mix makes something called Muddy Buddy. You know what this is? It's called Muddy Buddies.
If you get rid of the E at the end of both of those, you know what you get?
Mud blood. I'm not saying. They make puppy chow and sell it. So they actually make puppy chow and sell it. So I don't have to make the puppy chow myself. It's not as good because it's not like homemade or anything. But you know, I bought a package at Meijer the other day, and it tastes just like puppy chow. And they sell it. I did not know that they sell it. So if anyone wants puppy chow, it was probably my favorite treat like as a kid growing up, because sometimes for like your birthday and stuff, you'd bring in like cupcakes or brownies or something like that. I would love it when somebody had a birthday and they brought in puppy chow, or like when you had a bake sale and it was
a bake sale.
Puppy chow.
Staple of the bake sales at our elementary school. And I like puppy chow too. I would say if you're going to have it, no shade to Chex, but it is like a big company. I would say find an aunt. It doesn't have to be your aunt. Just go on a Facebook group, find somebody who has a niece or a nephew. Aunts are great at making puppy chow. That's what I found. My scientific studies have concluded that once you're an aunt, you just somehow gain this ability to make puppy chow. So shouts out to aunts.
And what I hate is that, have you heard of the word like languish before?
Yeah. Like, is it kind of like faltering or to like, it's not a good thing, right? Languish is bad.
It's not a good thing. So my supervisor at Oakland sent an email to like our department with this New York Times article that was about COVID mental health and the word languishing. So languishing is a sense of stagnation and emptiness. So with the paradigm or the spectrum that is mental health, you have like depression on one side, which is the bottom of the barrel. And then you have flourishing, which is like top of the top, highest point that you can be with the mental illness and mental health. And so languishing is described in this article as being somewhere in the middle, where you're not quite feeling like hopeless, depressed, and all of that stuff. And you're not quite feeling overjoyed and everything with life. And so with COVID, there's been like this emotional long haul, as they state, where languish is the middle child of mental health. You're not functioning at full capacity for that. And it's kind of languishing and this feeling of indifference and how you can't really like catch yourself, or you're indifferent to feeling indifferent, is like the pathway to feeling depressed and going into a depression for that. And so when you can't see your own suffering, you can't even help yourself. So the last quote like of the article says, we still live in a world that normalizes physical health challenges, but stigmatizes mental health challenges. And that's completely real, because when you think about languishing, that sums up a lot of like how I felt for the last like 18 months. I mean, we're almost going on 2 years of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're still stuck in this point where like you're not quite sure when things get to normal or what normalcy is. You're kind of grieving for the lost normalcy that we once had back in like 2019. And so languishing, like anguish, like you're kind of just stuck in the mm-hmm. middle, and it's like you're getting cement blocks tied to your ankles and like you can't move because there's so much weight holding you down. And so like I've been on the depression side. I dealt with that very, very strongly for the last three years of my undergrad, and then moving up until like I started going to grad school, to be honest with you, which is like this hopeless feeling, aimless feeling, pointless feeling, all of that stuff. Like I dealt with that strongly for like a good 5 years. And then when you go to flourishing, like I don't remember the last time I felt flourishment. So it's just been like this either depression or this languishing feeling. And so reading an article like that, there's just a way that people capture everything that you're feeling and then putting it to word and print. And like my boss saying it to me makes you realize that you're not alone in what you're feeling, but it's just how it's going to be weird transitioning from COVID to normalcy, and what this quote unquote new normal is a new buzzword for that, but how you get to, what's it going to look like? Like when do we know, like, I don't have to wear a mask into a grocery store anymore. Because at this point, I think that the issue is that it feels everlasting and it feels like it's not going to end. And that's what languishing is that you're stuck in the middle. You are not depressed. You're not flourishing. You're just there. And I think that's a very dangerous mindset to be in. That's kind of what the article talks about. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
is there any, so you're talking about, so languishing is between flourishing and depression.
Correct.
So it's either you're flourishing, which is good. Languishing is also, it's bad, but it's not as bad, or?
Languishing is like a sense of indifference. So if you're thinking of like a spectrum, like gender, sexuality, like the autism spectrum, like there's, everything's fluid. So with languish, there's like depression, which would be like a 0 out of 10. And then flourishing is like a 10 out of 10. And languish is probably like a 4 through 6. Like you're not, you're just there. You're just indifferent about things. You're indifferent about things that are like, hey, do you want to go to this party? Man, I don't care. Like you're not at full capacity, as the article states.
Gotcha.
So maybe you're slacking off at work a little bit here and there. Or you're cutting time, or you're not giving your all to your relationship, or you're not giving your all to your studies, your professional life, any of that stuff. Like you're not fully giving your all, I guess. And that's like where I was stuck in for like at least since COVID, probably. Like it was very hard for me to feel comfortable giving my all. It was very hard for me to like trust in myself and trust in like everyone around me. And it was very, very difficult to not feel like aimless or pointless or like this is not going to get better anytime soon. So that was like a little tangent, and that's not my only one for today's episode.
You brought up the quote about how the world currently recognizes physical health but stigmatizes mental health. Do you think we've seen shifts in that? You know, I'm bringing to mind, I'm thinking about Naomi Osaka, Simone Biles during the Olympics, and then Ben Simmons claimed, you know, again, yeah. I don't know the details around that, but do you think that there's been improvements in that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Dak Prescott talked about it after his brother was killed. Kevin Love talked about it from an NBA standpoint first. So I think that people are talking about it. I think that the issue is that it is becoming normalized, but I think that a lot of people are also generalizing mental health, especially on like things like Twitter and social media, thinking that, oh, I need to clean my desk. I'm suffer from OCD. Oh, I'm feeling stressed out for a job interview. That means I have
anxiety or whatever.
And I do get it. It's a part of anxiety. Like being stressed out is fine, but I think that it's generalizing in these mental health disorders that shouldn't be generalized. Like just because you want your desk to be clean doesn't mean you suffer from OCD. Like OCD is a very debilitating and crippling feeling that some people feel.
Yeah.
And same thing. I mean, it's okay.
Oh, I tap my foot. So I have ADHD.
Exactly. So I think that in one way it is being normalized, but in another way, I think that it's also being harmfully generalized.
Gotcha.
Because I'm a mental health expert, obviously, because I have a website where I blog about mental health and stuff.
You do? Do you want to plug it here?
Stephen-Bryant.com. Thank you. I haven't written on it in about 18 months. So,
but there is all this podcast material for you to listen to.
That is true. I do think that it is swaying in the right direction. I think that as we become more aware and people still talk about like how they're feeling, I think that's a good thing, especially these celebrities and athletes who are. We just expect them to be perfect and forget that they're human beings. So I think that once they also sort of normalize what they're going through, I think that it'll knock down that stigma. But even like my dad struggled with like understanding anxiety and depression that my sister go through. Even like my grandma was diagnosed with depression and she didn't even know it because her friends kept telling her that she has a lot of friends. So she can't be depressed when she has a lot of friends. And I think that like older folks don't really get it, I guess. And that's something that will change over time, obviously. But those are my thoughts. What about you? Yeah. What do you love? Take us
out. So I'm actually going to start with a hate. So you brought up the pandemic. What's the new normal? I can do what's not going to be the new normal, which is opening new physical retail stores. My hate it here is the fact that COVID has really accelerated the death of physical retail. A lot of people had trepidation before the pandemic about shopping online.
Good word.
They were worried about, thank you. They were worried about, you know, if I enter, you know, I think it's common with older folks, but they're like, if I put my information on the internet, somebody's just going to hack it and it's going to get stolen. But, you know, with COVID-19, it forced people to go online because stores were shuttered. And so now that people have made that initial step, they feel more comfortable shopping online. And they find the convenience, because there's no doubt that it's pretty convenient to, you know, with a click of a button, you don't even have to get in your car and you can have something delivered to your door within 2 days for free. Or if you live in a certain area that day. So there's definitely benefits and reasons why e-commerce has taken off. It's gone from 14% of total retail in 2019 up to 18% in 2020. Analysts at UBS expect that to grow to 27% of all retail sales in the U.S. It's going to be 27% of all retail sales by 2026, which is scary in certain ways. It's because this analyst from UBS also said that if e-commerce sales increase to 30%, which is only 3% off what they're forecasting for 2026, nearly 150,000 stores in the country are going to close. Which is a lot, which means, you know, you figure for each of those, there's at least like maybe between 50 and 100 jobs. We're talking about millions of people permanently losing their jobs, which is obviously not a good thing.
No.
And one of the bastions of physical retail for years have been malls. So there's research that estimates that 25% of America's 1,000 malls will close over the next 3 to 5 years. So, which is a lot, and I'm going to get more into malls in my love, but Steven, what's your favorite company to shop? Be honest.
I probably use Amazon the most.
You use Amazon the most.
Yeah.
So Amazon is the face of e-commerce in the United States.
It is.
And Alibaba is the face of e-commerce in China. So there's people who on Twitter will be like, well, why should I have to pay taxes if Amazon doesn't pay taxes? That's not totally true. Amazon does, in fact, pay taxes. The problem is they pay far less than they should. Okay. So for 2020, the year of our Lord, 2020, Amazon's effective income tax rate was 9.4%. Okay. So if you're an individual in the United States and you make anything more than $10,000 a year, you paid a greater percent of your income in taxes than Amazon did.
Cool. So I'm more valuable than Amazon is, right?
Amazon's effective rate was 9.4% versus what is the statutory corporate tax rate of 21%. Okay, they get this because of subsidies and tax breaks and stuff like that. They paid $1.8 billion in federal income tax versus the $4.1 billion that they should have paid if they really were hitting that 21% tax rate. Over the three-year period from 2018 to 2020, Amazon paid an effective federal tax rate of 4.3. Okay, so they paid 9.4 last year, but over the trailing 3 years because of tax breaks, they've paid 4.3%, which is less than half of what somebody who makes $10,000 pays.
Now, nice. That's all I can say.
Which is just, it's really, it's criminal. It should not be allowed. You know, companies are given tax breaks because they, what they'll do is they'll go to, you know, they had this whole thing with Amazon just like 3 years ago where they're like, all right, we're going to bring a new, you know, headquarters, a new big office building, a new fulfillment center. And what they're doing is they go to these, they release a press statement, and then cities like New York and Nashville and in Detroit, I think at one point said it too. These cities are like, okay, we want you to bring those jobs here. And Amazon's okay, like, what are you going to do for us? And so they do things like we'll reduce zoning restrictions for you guys. We'll reduce taxes that you guys pay. And so this is how these companies get away with, well, these companies, mainly Amazon, because it's the biggest retailer in the world now, or in America. That's how they get away with this, is because they're making governments sacrifice taxes to bring jobs, which are also, in effect, taking jobs from other retailers. It's kind of sickening. I hate it. I mean, I give you crap every time you order something off Amazon. I'm not averse to it. Like the computer I'm recording on, ordered it off of Amazon. I use Amazon probably once a month. Maybe I'll buy something on Amazon once a month or once every other month, which is way, 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 way less than people we know. People you know use it weekly.
Yeah, I use it maybe once a week. I don't rely on it. If I can, I try to buy from other places. Like, I don't order groceries or anything off of Amazon, but if I need something quickly or if it's a computer part, Amazon is usually the best place to go for that. But other than that, I attempt to like use a bookstore if I'm buying a book. Yeah. Or I try to go to like a Meijer to buy a movie or something, even though Meijer is still like a multi-billion dollar place. Like,
yeah.
Amazon is convenient, but I'm trying to not use it as frequently.
And I've said nothing but negative stuff about Amazon, other than the fact that I mentioned it's convenient. But Amazon has had some positive effects. Like, for one, even though they take more jobs than they create, they're still creating jobs. They've made moves to be more environmentally friendly. I think they have a carbon neutral pledge for the future. Jeff Bezos is investing heavily in alternative energy. So there's good stuff they're doing. Minimum wage, I think the company, is it $15 now is the minimum for Amazon, which has pressured other retailers. I think Walmart is now $15 as well. So there's good things about Amazon, no doubt. But I just wanted to bring to the point that it's sad that you see this behind me. You see a mall that the last time I just went to a mall this weekend. And I tell you, it did not look anything like this. It was multi-levels, but there were not this many people. Which actually, now that I'm looking at, there's not really many people at all. Which it was even more empty than this. The mall that in our hometown is even scarier empty. Which actually brings me to my love it, which is the fact that Amazon is not going away. E-commerce is not going away. People have discovered the ease and comfort of e-commerce. And so the question is now, with all these stores that are closing their doors, what's going to happen to shopping malls? So at our mall, the Bay City Mall, they converted several storefronts into Planet Fitness. So that's something that I know gets used quite a bit. Around here, some of the storefronts have been turned into experiences. So you can go, you can do like paintball. You can throw like the hatchet throwing, like these activities, like, you know, you're not shopping, but you're still going in there. So that's my love. It is people repurposing malls into other things. So besides those activities you can do, people are also in some areas converting them into apartments. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense because you hear a lot about areas like New York and San Francisco and LA being so expensive to live. And part of that is because of zoning restrictions. So cities and municipalities set rules that are like, okay, we want to preserve some natural resources, so we're not going to allow more building in places. So with people wanting to constantly come and move in, and there's not an increasing amount of housing, that just drives rents higher. So this conversion idea of taking existing kind of dead shopping centers and converting them to residential areas could be a benefit for everybody, because it means rents can go down, more people can have homes, and these areas are not just being barren and unused. So that's my love of here, is converting malls into other things.
I also think that malls could be converted into like a movie theater, because that's kind of what the Bay City Mall is right now, is just a movie theater with a gym attached to it. And so I think that like these imagined places, like when I saw James Bond in theater, I was like, oh man, I need to go see more movies, and I plan on it, especially Eternals. So I'm going to see that, of course, in theaters. But I think that malls like being repurposed, like you said, into experiences and things like that makes a lot of sense, because people are going to use those facilities. They might not be going there for retail purposes anymore, mm-hmm. but I think that the land can still be used and the building can be repurposed. So I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah. And I honestly, like using the one behind me as an example, I don't know, it kind of looks nice. Like it wouldn't be my first choice to live in a mall, but I've seen apartments that are in far worse conditions and have way worse, appearances. So yeah, I'm hopeful that more malls will be converted to experiences and residential areas. So Steven,
yeah, sure.
What is your next love and what's your next hate?
So my next hate, I'm going to go with the hate first. And it is that The Walking Dead is finally coming to an end. And
no.
So I know a lot of people, it's going to end. I think the second half of the final season begins in February, if I'm not mistaken. So it has like 10 episodes left. I know a lot of people, it's the cool thing to bash The Walking Dead. It's gone on for 13 years, I think. And it's not been good for like the last 7 or so. But I've stuck around. I've been a fan. I've watched since everyone died or everyone went missing and all that stuff. I've been watching. And so, yeah, a lot of the plot is recycled. It's the same thing. Big bad person. Oh, we need to team up with them. Oh, they're going to kill us. Oh, we need to kill them and kill the big bad. Whoa, shocking. Somebody, a main character died, but we finally got him. Like, if they would have just killed the big bad guy first, it would have prevented everything. Regardless, it's the ending of... Well, it's not even the ending, because they have like movies coming out. They have like 3 spinoff shows working. So it's not even like the end, but it's the end of the initial show, the beginning show that everyone fell in love with back in like 2008 or 9.
Yeah.
First season on Netflix. Yeah. You could watch parties on Xbox with your friends. So I would watch that, and my little emoji guy would be like in a movie theater seat. I could watch with my friends. And it was like a whole revelation. Like, it took the world by storm. I remember live tweeting in high school The Walking Dead episodes with my friends, like, on Twitter. We would talk about it. And so I know that it sucked lately, but there's been a lot of good elements. Like Norman Reedus, who plays Daryl Dixon on there, has been fantastic. He's kind of carrying the whole show, him and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who plays Negan. He's been fantastic as well. And so it's still decent. It still also sucks, but it's still decent.
It's
so
decent, but it sucks.
And I just hate it because, you know, when you're with something for this long, like it's kind of bittersweet that it's ending. Like it should have ended a few years ago, but at the same time, it's finally ending, and I'm curious to see how it plays out. I know that they're probably going to do some dumb cliffhanger that leads to like a movie or a spinoff series, and I don't have the energy for that, so I'm not going to tune into that. But at the same time,
this was a cultural touch point for, I mean, this really did feel like it started the zombie obsession that we went through for a while, right? I mean, and it outlasted so many other things, like Left 4 Dead was a huge video game. What else am I thinking of? There's a bunch of like other Zombieland, I think, came around around this time.
Yeah. We have World War Z now and all these other like sort of apocalyptic shows.
Yeah.
Or not shows, movies, but Warm Bodies was another like rom-com zombie movie. I don't know if you've seen it. I thought it was good. I need to rewatch it and see if I still think it's good or not. But it kind of like did kickstart this whole zombie thing. Like, yeah, we had Evil Dead back in the day, and was it Night of the Living Dead? Is that another one?
Both. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had those, but like nothing in like there was no large, broad television show on zombie. Like it did something intuitive. It was very innovative in the space that it was operating in. And to keep it up for 13 years, I mean, I know that it's based on a comic book, but still using like the source material for that long has been fantastic. And it now has a bad rep, but I think that it still is a very decent TV show to watch. It yeah. still sucks.
You know, it's tough to say goodbye.
It is. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's tough to say goodbye to things that you love, but at some point, you know, yeah. it's for the best.
At one point, I was very attached to the characters, and now I'm in a state that is going to be languishing. Like, I'm indifferent on them.
Call back.
Yeah. So, but then, like, if I have The Walking Dead and then it's like Game of Thrones, like, I was still very invested in Game of Thrones and I still will rewatch it and everything. But, like, it should end, not the Game of Thrones, but like The Walking Dead should have ended a few years ago back when it was like at the peak, because these last few seasons have been painful.
How was Negan a good guy? I guess I could go back and watch it, but so
he's not a good guy.
Oh, okay.
He's a bad guy who has like a redemption arc that's currently ongoing. But he brought some refreshing nature into the show, because prior to that, there was like the governor and all these other things. Yep. And they're like a recycling the same plot line of the big bad. Whereas Negan came and like, they didn't kill him off. So he stayed. And so he's still on the show. So there's a lot to do with that, but he's been great. Jeffrey Dean Morgan is a fantastic follow on Twitter. He always like shares photos of like his goats and his chickens and his dogs. And he's pretty cool. So
I think it had one of the most memorable series openers of all time. Like that whole thing of Rick Grimes waking up in the hospital and then taking the horse yeah. on the highway, and he encounters a first walker or whatever and gets in the tank. And then it's just a really, really good show. At least the first couple of seasons. I stopped watching after season three. So I'm way behind.
They just had like a horror episode, like an episode that was horrifying, like legitimately felt like I was watching a horror movie, where two of the characters were trapped in this house and they'd be chased around by people that were wearing like a Tarzan like thing to cover up their no-nose areas. And they were chasing them around on all fours, like jumping off of things and trying to kill them and like chase them and eat them. And it was horrifying to watch. Like, I was stressed out watching it. So they're still doing things like that. But then like when you get to the actual major storyline, it's like super boring. But the show like will stand the test of time. It was the first of its kind. It has probably three or four of the most gruesome television scenes ever. And so I'm just sad that it's gone.
So that's what you hate, but what do you love?
What I love is going to kind of sound like hate, but it's what I love.
That's
beautiful. Did you see the news that Superman's son is now bisexual in the new comics that are coming out?
I saw like a tweet or two about it.
Yeah. There's like this whole rage about it. And obviously when you have things like this happen, there's a lot of people that come out of the woodwork that just like to spout off their bigotry and
a lot homophobia. Of accounts on Twitter with 12 followers.
Yeah. Talking about how it's corrupting the youth and everything. So I have some thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm.
People love to get mad when relationships are queer relationships, right? People get mad when a guy is dating a guy and a girl is dating a girl.
Boozy bear.
And society has been shoving heterosexual relationships down our throats since the beginning of time. And so hate is like a very corrosive emotion to feel. It is going to prevent people from feeling joy. It's going to prevent them from feeling happy. It's going to prevent them from feeling anything. And so the whole premise of like Superman, right? He's this deity. He's this Superman. He is like super strong. He flies. He does all this stuff. And the real premise is that he's in love with Lois Lane, which is a heterosexual relationship. And the second that Superman's son wants to kiss a dude, all hell breaks loose. And it just makes you feel like if you aren't for queer relationships being normalized in this sense, then that means you are supporting everything that comes with marginalizing them, which is suicide, which is assault, which is homelessness. You're normalizing all of these things because you can't wrap your head around things that should be normal for the future. And so it kind of also begs the question, like, can a superhero be bisexual? Like, can you save the world if you're bisexual? Like, are people mad at Superman's son because he's bisexual and therefore he can't stop the meteor from coming to the Earth?
Yeah, right. Like, would Zod be like, you know what? I was afraid of you, but now that I know you like dudes too,
yeah,
I ain't afraid of you anymore.
So it's just mind-boggling because sex has also been prevalent in superheroes for like the end of time. You have Batman and like his 19 million women that he slept with throughout the whole comics. You have Iron Man and Pepper Potts. You have Superman and Lois Lane, Spider-Man and MJ and Gwen Stacy. You have Captain America and Peggy Carter and Sharon Carter. He got both the Carters.
That's weird. That's like, really weird.
And but no, people aren't giving a fit about that. It's because on the front of a comic strip, Superman's son is kissing another dude. Heaven forbid somebody be bisexual in the universe of comics. Like, heaven forbid. Do the people that are like super into the comics just go through the whole thing just thinking, oh, everyone in this is straight? No, that's not a proper comparison of life. So
heteronormativity.
I just want to say I love this because this is monumental for kids that are queer, that are into comic books, because they've been getting, and I don't know if you've seen comic books, like I own a few comic books. Like, they are very provocative with the way that people are dressed and everything like that. So if you're like a queer child and you're reading this stuff and you're like, oh, wow, they really want me to be this way, they really want me to be that way, this is giving some normalized viewpoints and perspective to them that they can be brave enough to like come out if they want. It's not shoving the heteronormativity down their throats. So I think that this is a good step in the right direction. I think people really need to just shut up.
Well said.
That's my thoughts. So Superman, your son being bisexual, you know, I'm a supporter. I'm all into that. I don't know if this episode's been good or not. I kind of went on a few different rants.
How long until you think, well, do you think it'll happen where the man behind you can be Superman's son in a movie?
Oh man. I think that Timothy Chalamet will be a superhero or like in a superhero film at some point.
I agree. And I'm not here to body shame, but I don't know if he could be Superman right now.
No, he's a little scrawny to be Superman.
There are some shots of him in Dune where I'm like, this is an anime character come to life. Like, very, very lanky, very thin, great for models, but saving America or the world from General Zod, I don't know.
He very well could bulk up too. But we got in this argument with our friend Tyler in the group chat. Tyler, a former guest on this podcast, said that Timmy could never be a superhero because he's not buff or anything. And I brought up the point that Peter Parker's not like a super buff dude. Like, Timothy Chalamet 1000% could have gotten Spider-Man over Tom Holland.
Yeah, but I don't know. I haven't really checked the Spider-Man source material in a while, but I will say that the definitive Sam Raimi Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire gets bit. The next morning he wakes up. Do you remember?
He is buff.
He's like jacked and he like looks down. And he's like, oh, I have abs and I don't need glasses.
That is very true.
There's definitely superhero. Like, what's his name? Mr. Fantastic?
Yeah.
Where he like just stretches. Like, they don't even need to do CGI for Timothy Chalamet. He could do that already. And Mr. Fantastic's not buff. So there definitely are characters that don't have to be buff.
Right. So I think he could be. He'll be a superhero at some point, I'm sure.
I'm surprised he hasn't been in the MCU yet.
Well, everyone, thank you for enduring 50 episodes of us. This is our half dollar episode. And if you have any questions, want to be a guest before we end in two more episodes after this, please let us know. I love it here. Hate it here at gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, love, hate it here. I don't tweet, so forget that. If you want to follow us on Facebook, I love it here, I hate it here. Instagram, I love it here, I hate it here, to see all of our cool posts and everything like that. So in other words, while we are coming to an end, we are still just beginning. Is that good?
Yeah, I don't know what the
we're just beginning means. We're just beginning. That's for us to know and you to find out. As always, peace and love.
Get spooky.